If you've got your Bibles, which I hope you do because you're at home, or if you've got an iPad or you've got your phone or whatever the thing is that you're not using to stream this on, pull up Mark chapter 13. And so that's where we're going to be. So this is perfect. So we in deciding what to preach on. So like we've been going through Mark, as you know, for the past, I don't know, two semesters. And when the coronavirus, when it hit, you're wondering, like, should we change what we're preaching on? Should we not? Like, what do we do? And should we do a series based on something to do with this, anxiety or depression or alone, loneliness or whatever? But we decided to go back to Mark and just continue on with our original plan. And it's so perfect because this week, Jesus is talking about the end of the world. And so it couldn't be more perfect. For what we're doing this morning. Currently I'm sitting down, but if I get really amped into this, I'll kick the chair out of the way and just start running and do, I don't know. But anyways, but I have a question for you as you turn to Mark chapter 13. What do you think about when you think about the future? And so when you think about the future or what's going to happen, like, what immediately comes to your mind? And so when I was... I guess it was 1999, so I guess I was nine. There's a movie on the Disney Channel called Xenon, the Girl of the 21st Century. Okay, it's a totally awesome movie. It's about a girl who's 13 who lived on a space station circling the Earth. And she was living in the year 2049, which is only 29 years from now. So it's not that distant anymore. But she lives on a space station orbiting the Earth. And she is sent to Earth because she has gotten in trouble. And so while she's on Earth, she uncovers a plot that this dude is going to, like, send a virus to the space station and crash it or something like that. And so she spends the rest of the movie trying to figure out how to get back up there to stop that guy from crashing the station. And the commander of the station doesn't believe her, and so he's trying to prevent her from getting back on the station. What's interesting for us, like in looking at this movie, which is done, you know, 20 years ago now, is to see what they thought the future would be like, or what devices. And so primarily when we think about the future, we think of technology. We think of, like, what are cool things that we're going to have in the future? So, like, are we going to have, like, computers embedded in our glasses or brains or whatever to be able to see things, virtual reality? And for Xenon... there were a couple things that they had that, in 1999, were mind-blowing. So she had this, basically, a really bulky iPad that you could look and look at the person that you're talking to on the phone the whole time. So she had one of those. We thought those were totally awesome. Another thing she did that was futuristic is that she lived in space on the space station. She could travel back and forth to space, like, no big deal. Her friend wore it was Raven, what's her name? She wore slinkies in her hair. That's a futuristic idea. Interestingly enough, though, they only had desktop computers with, like, thick monitors. They couldn't think beyond that. But when I think back to fourth grade, when I was in fourth grade, we had a little magazine to where we were looking at what is the future going to be like. And the main thing in there was flying cars, okay? That was going to be the future for us, was flying cars. And so when we think about the future, often we think about technology. Now, why do I tell you this? Because in Mark chapter 13, Jesus transitions a normal conversation with his disciples into talking about the future with them. But instead of being concerned at all with technology, which at this moment he doesn't really care about, he starts to say, what is the world going to be like? And here's what he says in Mark chapter 13. He says this: chaos is coming. Events, both regional and worldwide, are coming your way that are going to be completely out of your control. That's what he tells his disciples the future is going to be like. And so look at verse 1. As this conversation begins, his disciples are amazed as they're walking through Jerusalem. They see these giant buildings made of giant stones, and they look at him and they're like, "Teacher, look at these massive stones. Aren't these things incredible?" And all of a sudden, Jesus takes this conversation and he turns it to be about the future. Because what he says is this, is that, listen, no building here, no stone is going to remain. He says everything is going to be torn down. Well, they sit down later in verse 3, and they're like, when is this going to happen? Like, what are you talking about? Why is this going to be the case? But then Jesus continues on the conversation in verse 5, and here's what he says. He says, watch out, because chaos is coming. Jesus told them, watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, saying, I am he. And they will deceive many. And when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. These things must take place, but it is not yet the end. For nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. And so in this, Jesus says, watch out. Chaos is coming. That's what the future is going to be like. There's going to be things that are going to happen that are out of your control. You're going to hear about wars. You're going to hear about nations rising up against one another. People are going to come and claim to be a god. He said, there's going to be worldwide natural disasters such as earthquakes, and there's going to be food shortages from famines. He said, but in all of this, don't be alarmed, because that's not the end. But right now, these predictions, like ordinarily we read these things and we think, wow, this is weird. This is a weird statement. And then we just kind of move on to the whatever else might make sense later on. And so when you get to chapter 13, you're go back to verse 32. Then he just says, one day no one knows when he's going to return. And we kind of focus on things like that. But during times like this, during the coronavirus and all this pandemic and the social distancing and everything else, these verses or these predictions in verse 5 through 8 mean more to us because we see this verse playing out right in front of our eyes. And so we're experiencing chaos now because of this pandemic. And Jesus said these were coming. And so our concern now is not just about us getting sick, but we're concerned about other people getting sick who might be more vulnerable. But it extends, like the current chaos extends beyond just the virus. It's going towards our economy as well. So like our economy is coming to a halt. Unemployment is rapidly rising, and many of us have also experienced either job loss or a major reduction in hours. And we're trying to figure out what do we do during this time. Many of us have seen our investments or our retirement accounts plummet because the stock market is just dropping. Many businesses, small businesses, don't have the reserves to withstand without any foot traffic. Now, all of that is a downer. But I say all of this to say chaos is here and it's right in front of our eyes. And Jesus told us it would come. But look at this. Look at verse 8. In verse 8, he says this, these are the beginning of birth pains. So birth pains were common in apocalyptic literature. That means writings in the Bible that were written about the end times. And most commonly, when the prophets wrote about birth pains, They were talking about judgment coming from God. And this was both their present experience, and like the Babylonians were going to come and destroy their city, or another nation was going to come and come to war against them and destroy them. But also it talked about this future fuller judgment from God when he was going to return. But this is a weird picture to throw out there, birth pains. Why? Well, I've never physically had a kid, but I know someone who has. And in that experience, I've learned two things about birth pains. One, you cannot escape them. Two, is that they signify something significant is coming. And so if you've ever had a kid, you realize, yep, that's true. Like once you get birth pains, you can't escape it. And it signifies something major is coming. And so there are two realities about living in our world that Jesus is telling us. Here's what he says. Chaos is coming, and it's going to be out of your control. So expect it. The second thing he says is this: these chaotic events are meant to point our eyes to something significant that's coming. And so all of the chaos in our world is designed to point our eyes beyond our world and beyond our current time to a more significant event that will happen one day. That's what Jesus is saying. And so Jesus fills in his disciples. He says, chaos is coming. Then he says, persecution, verse 9, persecution is coming for you. And then he says in verse 14, Jerusalem is going to fall and it's going to be awful. But all of this is building and pointing to an even greater event. Look at verse 24. All of these things are chaotic and they're building together, but yes, they're pointing to something bigger. The ultimate worldwide event in verse 24. Here's what Jesus says. But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not shed its light. The stars will be falling from the sky and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. And so he says that in a day in which there is major chaos, there's going to be cosmic dysfunction where the stars are going to fall. The sun is no longer going to shine. The moon at the evening is not going to give any more light. He says cosmic dysfunction is going to be everywhere. Heavens themselves will shake. And then back in verse 5, Jesus said, some people are going to come and claim to me. Don't believe them. When I come, what he's saying is this: when I come, you'll know it. When I come, you'll know it. All of this chaotic event in our world is pointing to this major worldwide event that's happening one day. It will happen. And Jesus is saying on that day, there's going to be major chaos and you'll know it's me. That's what he's saying. And so if you see chaos in the heavens, look up. Now in verse 26, here's what it says. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And he will send out angels to gather his elect from the four winds. He's saying on that day, the day that all of our chaotic events in the world are pointing to, I am going to come back. Jesus is going to come back in great power and in glory. And that's to accomplish two things. This is, I am coming back to bring judgment on the world. Hence, the chaotic scene. But the second thing is this. There's something else here that helps you and me to be able to live through this chaos. Look at verse 27. But he will send out his angels to gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. And this is a great truth for you and me, especially in the middle of chaotic days, is that Jesus is going to return for us for this purpose, to gather his people to go be with him. And so here's a great truth for you. It's that you won't be lost if you believe in Jesus. If you are committed to Jesus, you won't be left out, because the God of the universe is coming back for you. And so you have a future, because your Savior is coming for you. And that's a truth that we can hold on to in the middle of the chaos, in the middle of all of this, is that the world and this life is not all there is. This current chaos is not a sign that God hates you, or that he's not pleased with you, or that he's bringing judgment upon you. He told us it was coming. He said this event, this world is going to be chaotic, and it's coming for you, so expect it. And then he says, but instead, it's designed to point your eyes up to me. To point your eyes up to him and his return for you. And so let that be a reminder for the ultimate historical event, that Jesus is coming back. And so look what he says here, verse 32. Now concerning that day, or hour no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. He's talking about the day he's returning. It says, verse 33, watch, be alert, for you don't know when the time is coming. It's like a man on a journey who left his house and gave authority to his servants, and he gave each one his work, and then commanded the doorkeeper to be alert. So, it's got a picture here. The business owner. These guys are working for him, and he says, hey, listen, I'm going on a journey. It's not coronavirus world, and so he can travel all he wants. He's going on a big cruise. Now, while he's on his cruise, he's saying, you guys take care of the shop. You take care of all the stuff. You maintain the customers. You maintain, make sure everything's clean. Make sure we've got all our food prepped and everything else. And so while he's gone, he's entrusting these guys to handle all of his business for him. But what he says is when I get back, I've got expectations that it's going to be taken care of. I've got expectations that you're going to be doing what you're supposed to do. And so back then there were no cell phones. And so he says, watch out. Be alert. Have your doorkeeper watching the door to make sure be on the lookout for when I'm going to return, and make sure that everyone else is prepared for that day for me returning. Because if I get back and no one's done anything and everything is dirty and the money's mishandled and no food's been prepped and customers haven't been taken care of, then everyone's getting fired. And so he says, be alert. Be alert. Be on the lookout. I'll be aware that I'm returning one day, and so that should be a call to responsibility for us. And so here's what he says. In verse 35, therefore, be alert, since you don't know when the master of the house is coming, whether in the evening or at midnight or at the crowing of the rooster or early in the morning. Otherwise, when he comes, he might suddenly find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to everyone, be alert. Here's why that's important for us. Because Jesus says all the chaos in the world is supposed to turn our eyes to him and the ultimate world event when he's going to return for us. But he says no one knows when that day is going to be. No one knows when that's going to happen, not even the Son. Only the Father knows that. And so his call for us in this parable in verse 32 to 37, his call for us then is to make preparations now. Don't waste your current chaos by just binging Netflix nonstop. Or don't waste your current chaos by just getting frustrated over the fact that you have to be stuck in your house 24/7 with your family and there's no escape. It's like, don't waste your current chaos. Use this as an opportunity to prepare for his return, because you don't want him to come back and not be prepared. That's what his call is here. He says, make preparations, be ready for him. Have your eyes turned up waiting on him to return. And so look beyond your current experience, your current world, to him and to his world, and be ready for it. And so what does that mean? It means use this opportunity to lead your family to love him more. You've got more time right now, most of us. Some of us are like chickens with their heads cut off, but some of us have more time right now because we're forced to be at home. Use this as an opportunity to teach your kids, to be with your family, to teach them, remind them about spiritual things, about the God that we love, the God that we serve, and the God that's returning for us one day, to remove us from this chaotic world and to bring us into a new heaven and a new earth filled with peace. And so use this opportunity to teach your kids to pray, or to pray with your spouse. Use this opportunity to spend time with him when you have more time, when you're not having to drive or commute to the office or to school at 7 a.m. or whatever it is. Like when you're not having to spend that time to commute, don't waste that time with Facebook or Instagram or whatever, TikTok or whatever it is. Like, use time you have now wisely to prepare for him. And so spend time in his word. Create a Bible reading plan. Create it your own. Maybe you want to read through Mark. Maybe you pick up Philippians and say, for the next 2 weeks, I want to read through Philippians. and just spend time. Say, I want to schedule it every day. The time I would typically get up, 7 or 6:30 until 7 or 6:30 till 6:45. It doesn't have to be an eternity, but just build it into your day to make preparation now that you have more time. But then also use this time to teach your family, to guide your family, because you are the primary disciple maker for your family, for your kids. And so use this as an opportunity to teach your kids, to guide them as to what it looks like to follow Jesus, even in chaotic times. So don't waste it.